Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo.
Und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur. Und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.
Can you hear the sirens, Ethan? Gemma asked from a cot, looking up at me with terror in her eyes. Why are they so loud? Why won't they stop? It's okay, they're not going to hurt you, I tell her, wiping her forehead with a damp cloth. You're safe now, they can't get to you. But even as I say the words, I doubt them. We both know what happens when you see them, when the sirens get into your head and you can't get them out. Gemma tosses and turns on the cot, fidgeting and groaning, only half conscious. I know she doesn't have long, and I look over to Dad's rifle, leaning up against the stove. I won't let it come to that. I won't let them take her. It's my fault, really. I shouldn't have let her go off on her own. I mean, Christ, she's only 15, but I thought she'd be okay. She knew the rules like any of us. You stay inside whenever you can. You don't make a noise. You keep to the houses and the buildings in the town, and you stay away from the outskirts. And you never, ever go in the woods. She knew that. I knew that. It was practically engraved into our memories by Dad. So I thought she'd be okay if we split up the next time we went looking for supplies. I had been halfway across town, looking through the picked-over remains of a gas station convenience store, when I first heard the sirens. They sounded distant, like they always do, and the automated wail warped and crackled like a corrupted audio file. In the silence of the mostly dead town, the silence seemed deafening, and when they didn't stop after the first 5 seconds like they usually do when they test the air, I knew something was wrong. I guess I broke one of the rules too, when I ran out from the store and broke into a run towards the abandoned mall where Gemma had gone. Dad had always said to never, ever let your emotions control you when you're out on a scavenging run, that it clouds your judgment. I didn't care. I could hear the haunting sirens warble through the silence of the empty streets, and I knew that they had found her somehow. All I could think about was getting to her before they did. The sirens were deafening by the time I burst through the shattered glass door of the abandoned mall, the same few notes repeating over and over, yet getting deeper and more twisted with each second. I knew they were using their sirens for the hunt, zeroing in on their prey's location, and I could only run a little bit faster as I scanned the deserted shops for any signs of my sister. I saw the creature before I saw Gemma. It wasn't the first time I'd seen a siren head, but it was definitely the closest I had ever been to one. I had rounded the corner of the mall's main hallway and almost ran straight into it and frantically skidded to a halt behind an overturned kiosk stall. If it had been looking in my direction, it would have seen me for sure. But mercifully, it was facing the other way. The thing barely fit underneath the roof and had to bend its bony frame, easily around 20 feet high. Its features were almost identical to the one that had killed Dad, with the same dried, grey, mummified skin clinging to a slender, bony frame. Its limbs were long and spindly, yet its hands split into razor-sharp talons of bone instead of fingers. A long metal pole was jammed into its shoulders where its neck should have been, and strands of the disgustingly leathery skin wound around the pole and held it to the body. And, bolted to the pole, and looking almost comically out of place, were two siren speakers. I cautiously peeked over the edge of my cover, and that was when I saw what had distracted it. The siren head was taking slow, lumbering steps towards a figure sprawled on the floor, a figure with a leg drenched in blood, a figure that looked horribly familiar. A second later, I knew for certain that it was Gemma. Somehow, she had injured a leg and was unable to hide when the sirens first started sounding. As the creature stepped closer, bending down and raising its talons of bone, the sirens blared again. The same echoing, distorting sound, now 100 times louder as it echoed through the confined space of the mall. I was about to do something stupid out of desperation, but before I could leap up and over my cover, something changed in an instant. The long, drawn-out wail of the air raid-like siren instantly changed to the short, staccato bursts like those weather alerts we used to hear on TV. It was so loud I had to clamp on my ears as my head started pounding. But I still saw what happened. The siren head instantly straightened slightly, head brushing against the roof. And in an instant, it was running full tilt towards my right. I hadn't noticed it, but there was a man trying to hide behind an escalator, and the creature had spotted him. The sirens were blaring angrily in short bursts, and in the blink of an eye, the siren head had reached the man. He was screaming, although I could barely hear him over the ear-splitting noise. And then the creature's talons were thrust into his abdomen, and he was literally ripped in half by those bony fingers. The siren's back was to me, and the poor man's suffering was my opportunity. I leaped out from behind my kiosk and sprinted over to Gemma, sliding down beside her. Her eyes widened when she saw me, but we didn't have the luxury of speaking. I yanked her to her feet, and she grimaced, but knew enough to grit her teeth in pain instead of crying out. I turned then and started running back the way I came, hoping to round the corner before the creature finished with its fresh victim. But Gemma was slowing me down. She was limping beside me with her arm draped around my shoulder. But I knew we wouldn't make it. In sheer desperation, I paused and picked Gemma up bridal style, the adrenaline coursing through my veins, helping me ignore the 120-pound weight in my arms. I ran then as fast as I could, and I didn't look back. I could hear the siren calming now, changing back to the slow, drawn-out sound that signaled it wasn't agitated. When I heard it, we had long passed the bend in the hallway. It was a straight shot through the rest of the main hall and out of the mall, and we left the siren head's haunting cries echoing behind us. After we left the mall, I put Gemma down, and we limped our way back through the empty streets towards our house. We were out of most of the danger, but you could never be sure in the town. What you first thought was a lamppost in the distance could start running at you as it blared an inhuman screech, and the fog was already starting to roll in, obstructing our view. That made it all the worse. Gemma's condition was already starting to worsen before we made it back. When we arrived at our little log cabin on the corner of Cobb Street, her blonde hair was plastered to her head with sweat and her leg was still bleeding. I laid her down on the cot, locked the door, and moved to the medicine closet, all without a word. I was still panicking, and my heart was still racing. "I'm sorry," she whispered from across the room. And when I turned to look at her, I saw those green eyes clouded with guilt. "It was my fault. I shouldn't have asked you to split up, and I..." "Gemma, it's okay," I said, pulling the gauze pads and antibiotic cream from the cupboard. "We all make mistakes, and you'll be okay. You can learn from this, alright? Now tell me, what happened? Did you fall? Did it get your leg?" She shook her head as I crossed over and knelt down next to her, and she actually tried to sit up. I pushed her back down. "No, you don't understand, Ethan. I was shot. That guy, the other one in the mall, he surprised me and got me in the leg when I was looking at one of the stalls for food. And when I couldn't move, when I was trapped there, he tried to..." Gemma broke off, and for the first time since Dad died, she started crying. A horrible realization dawned on me, and I pulled her gently into a hug. She didn't have to spell it out. I knew what the people left around here were like. If the siren had come across them while he was trying to assault my little sister, well, I certainly wasn't so guilty about letting him die to cover our escape. I wanted to do something for her, anything to help her with this, but I had no words to say. I didn't know what to do, so I figured I could help by focusing on what I could fix. "Let me see it," I finally said, and Gemma pulled back and peeled away her jeans with a wince. The wound looked bad, and I'm not an expert, but I think the bullet was still in there. I couldn't do anything about that, and the realization of our situation was suddenly starting to weigh down on me. Gemma had been shot, attacked, and had survived a head-on confrontation with one of the siren heads. We had seen early on what happened to those that survived listening to their cries point blank, and it wasn't pretty. I didn't say any of these thoughts out loud though. Thankfully, she drifted off in a few hours, and she never asked me what we both knew, so I didn't have to lie to her. So I disinfected her wound as best I could, cleaned it, and wrapped it in gauze. I lay down on the floor next to the cot, and after a few hours of tossing and turning, I also drifted off into a restless sleep. The first day after our encounter, she seemed fine. Her strength was returning a bit, and her spirits were higher, even if it seemed a bit forced. In fact, I almost had myself fooled that everything would be okay. But on the second morning, it started. She woke up by shooting up off her bed and screaming out, frantically whipping her head around the room. I rushed over to her and asked her what was wrong, and I saw the panic had returned in her eyes. "The sirens, Ethan! Can't you hear the sirens?" she gasped, barely able to get the words out. "They're so close! They're so close! They're so close!" That was day two, and now it's even worse. She's barely coherent anymore. Most of her time is spent with nightmares for company instead of me. And when she is awake, all she can hear are the wails of sirens in her ears. Sirens that I can't hear, but that she insists are real. It's hard to watch, but I can't leave her. I refuse to. We're low on food, and while she's still sleeping in the morning, I decided to slip out and look for some. It's quiet today, though it's quiet almost every day, but the fog is mostly gone. I have an uneventful run back to the convenience store I'd been a few days ago, and I managed to pick out a few cans of baked beans and a protein bar hidden away in a back room. I stuff them in my pack and hurry back home. I don't want to leave Gemma alone any longer than I have to. From the moment I open the front door, I know something is wrong. Her cot is empty, and her blood-soaked bandages lay crumpled on the sheets, like she had ripped them off. There's no sign of her in the shared living room, dining room, kitchen space where the cot is, and the only place she could be is in the bathroom. I call out for her, but she doesn't answer. Cautiously, I cross the room and peer into the little bathroom. I find her there, motionless, staring into the mirror. She doesn't look good. Her eyes look panicky, her hair is a mess, and she's standing in a little puddle of blood dripping from her leg, which looks raw and painful. I wonder if she's actually awake. And after swallowing down my fear, I call out again. "Gemma, are you okay?" Gemma turns towards me, slowly, agonizingly slowly. Her eyes show no recognition when she sees me, and her lips quiver. She opens her mouth, and I think she's about to speak. But instead, she lets out a sound that chills me to the bone. Gemma lets out a scream that is incoherent and filled with pain. A scream that is almost identical in tone and pitch as the sirens of the creatures that stalk the streets. It hits me now that it's too late for her, and I turn to race back into the main room. Gemma is faster though. Faster than she has any right to be, and she tackles me to the ground before I can even get halfway to the door. She doesn't stop screaming. The human siren wailing away as her fingernails tear into my arms and rake at my face. I try to tell myself that this isn't my sister anymore, that it's only a hollow shell that the siren heads have claimed for a feast. But it doesn't make it any less painful. Despite her actions or her mind, her body is still the same, and it's easy to toss her light body off. She stumbles back hard, slamming her head against the wood stove, and it gives me the few precious seconds I need. I scramble to my feet and lunge for Dad's rifle, grasping it and switching the safety off just as Gemma stands to her feet again. And then the siren-like screaming stops. Gemma stops. She stands there, head tilted back, and she opens her mouth again. I'm sure she's going to start screeching again. But this time, she speaks. "Ethan," she asks slowly. And for a moment, my heart leaps. But then I remember how the siren heads got Dad, how they mimicked the voices of their victims, speaking words and making sounds without any understanding of their meaning. And I know for sure that this isn't her. This isn't my Gemma. The word was spoken awkwardly, without understanding, without emotion. It's not her anymore. Her mind is gone. They took her, and if I let her go, this empty shell will seek them out and they'll feast on her body. As I realize that, I also realize that I'm crying. Gemma doesn't move for a minute, and for a moment, I'm left to sob alone in the silence with the rifle pointed between her eyes. Then, Gemma opens her mouth and screams again. The siren-like wail snapping me out of my thoughts. And she lunges at me. And I pull the trigger. I see the bullet rip through her skull, snapping her head back as bright blood sprays out onto me, the floor, the walls. Her limp body collapses in a little heap, blood leaking from her head and her leg both, and I can only stare in horror at what I've done. I drop the rifle and stumble backwards, feeling nausea rise up in my throat. My Gemma, my sister, is dead. I killed her. And in the days since, all I can see when I close my eyes is the form of a limp and broken body lying in that pool of her own blood. See, back when this first started, we thought it wouldn't last long. We thought the National Guard would come, or that the President would send the army, anything like that. But after the first week of the sirens wailing, no one came. Our phone lines went down, our cell reception disappeared, and though we still had internet and electricity, nothing seemed to get through to anyone. The population started to fall rapidly, and after the first 2 weeks of sirens and screams, we started to believe that we had been forsaken. I don't know what happened. I don't know where these creatures came from, or why we're here. Maybe the government never sent anyone. Maybe they came and couldn't break through the forest filled with the creatures. I don't know. But as the weeks turned to months, and the months turned to a year, and more of us died away to the sound of the sirens, we started to believe no one was coming. Then Dad died, leaving Gemma and I to fend for ourselves for another pitiful 3 months of desperate survival. And now I know it. I am alone. No one came for Gemma. No one will come for me. I don't know why we're in this living hell, but I'm trapped here. No one is coming for me. My father died to them. My sister died because of them. And it's only a matter of time before I'm gone too. I don't even think this will be sent out. It's like the rest of the world has been stuck in time, and we're the only ones that have moved on with the calendar. What is it now? 2015? 16? I don't even know. But I can hear the sirens now, Gemma. I don't see them, but I can hear them. I can hear them in the house, and in the streets, and in my ears, and in my mind, and in my dreams. I hear them now. I hear them now.
Wir sind Theresa und
Nemo
und deshalb sind wir zu Shopify gewechselt.
Die Plattform, die wir vor Shopify verwendet haben, hat regelmäßig Updates gebraucht, die teilweise dazu geführt haben, dass der Shop nicht funktioniert hat.
Endlich macht unser Nemo-Boards-Shop dadurch auch auf den Mobilgeräten eine gute Figur und die Illustrationen auf den Boards kommen jetzt viel, viel klarer rüber, was uns ja auch wichtig ist und was unsere Marke auch ausmacht.
Starte deinen Test noch heute für 1 Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/radio.